All right, if you have your Bibles, please turn to James chapter 3. James chapter 3, and just by way of review, because we've been doing that, James is the author of the book of James, right? And he is writing to an audience of Jewish people that are dispersed, right, due to suffering and persecution and injustice, but they're still trying to live for the Lord, right? And so the theme of his book is the idea of faith in action, right? How we live out our faith in the things that we do, right? And he's got some themes that he talks about. He talks about trials and living out your faith in the midst of trials. He talks about wisdom, living out your faith by putting the truth into overalls and making it go to work in your life. And then he talks about wealth, right? Living out your faith when it comes to your perspective on wealth. And so he starts by presenting three stabilizing truths, right? I can rejoice and triumph in the trials of my life, knowing that they are for a purpose, that God is using them. Two, God offers me the wisdom to put the truth into work in my life. And three, God is using my trials to make me spiritually wealthy. And the James's conclusion of that is that we need to have a right theology of our trials, right? We need to have a right view of God in the midst of our sufferings. And a right view of God in the midst of our sufferings is one that recognizes that he is not the source of our trials. That belongs to our sin. But he is the source of every good and perfect gift. And so his allowance of trials in my life for the purpose of growing me and making me wise and making me spiritually wealthy, that is a gift. And it's one that I should praise him for rather than blame him for. And so the conclusion then is that I should apply wisdom in my daily life by being quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. And we talked about that for a while. And the result of all of that is the idea of measured and deliberate actions. And that's something that James carries throughout the rest of his letter. And he makes specific applications in the areas of trials and wisdom and wealth because faith in action is faith in action, right? Faith that works is faith that works, right? And so the idea of measured and deliberate actions. And so for the last several weeks, or rather for several weeks, we talked about measured actions in the area of wealth when it comes to the area of favoritism. And we made special application to the law, and we reminded ourselves that our faith is demonstrated by our actions relationally. The last several weeks, we've talked about measured actions in the area of wisdom, and we've made specific application to speech, which is yet again an external demonstration of an internal reality. And so today, James is going to continue that idea, and he's going to give some more thoughts on how wisdom plays into our working, all right? And so the message today is called Wisdom in Action, we're not going to get through all this today. It's just not going to happen. We're not going to get through all this today, so we're going to have to finish next week, but we'll probably get about halfway through. But the structure of this text is really interesting. If you're in James chapter 3, we're looking at verses 13 through 18. And the structure of this text is really interesting because it's actually quite poetic, right? He follows a chiastic pattern, or what we would call it an A-B-B-A pattern. And he utilizes antithetic parallelism, which is something we see a lot in the Psalms, right? He uses antithetic parallelism where a principle is shown by contrasting opposite sides of a truth. And again, we see that a lot in the Psalms as well. For example, there's one passage that when I was teaching at Westgate, it was our theme for the year. It says, the wicked man flees when the wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion, right? And so he uses that antithetic parallelism. He presents two different sides of a reality to try to show that principle. And that's something that James uses here. And so I want to try my best to capture some of that same structure in the message, and I want to try to capture some of that same parallelism homiletically. And so our outline today looks a little bit different, all right? And just don't get bogged down with this too much, but this is our outline. We'll get through about half of this today, and we'll pick up here and we'll finish next week. But I actually rendered this outline a few different ways, but I ultimately landed here because I think this is the one that perhaps does the best job homiletically kind of doing our outline here. But notice the use of the word but, right? And that there's that antithetic parallelism where here's this, but here's this. And then he sticks with that, here's this, but here's the opposite side of that. And so that's our structure, that's our outline. And so if you're with me in James chapter 3, let's pick up in verse 13. And so James starts this particular paragraph. He starts it by presenting contrasting imperatives based on conditional statements. And he introduces the first conditional statement with a question. And this is something that James has done a lot to facilitate reflection. We haven't really focused a lot on the fact that James uses questions to facilitate reflection, but he does. And so if you kind of look back through, you'll see a lot of questions in there. But James starts by introducing his first conditional statement with this question. And when he asks these questions, he may not necessarily be looking for people to respond. But I think in this case, he is looking for someone to respond. He does want someone to ask themselves, is this true of me? Because the imperative to follow is based on my answer to the question. All right? And so just by way of application, let's participate in James's exercise. Right? When James asks this question, let's ask ourselves this question. And so here's the question. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? That idea of knowledge is the idea of understanding. And don't forget that the context here is the idea of controlling the tongue and the idea of taking on the role of spiritual leadership and taking that seriously. And those who take on a role of spiritual leadership, those who take on the role of public declaration of God's word, because that's the context here, that's something that needs to be handled seriously. That's something that needs to be handled by those who are wise and knowledgeable. And so he asks, who among you, right, is a wise man and endued with knowledge? All right, let's define our terms here real quick. Let's start with knowledge. All right, endued with knowledge is the idea of possessing understanding. And understanding is defined as the demonstration of skill and aptitude in regards to knowledge. And so it's the ability to take something that you know and kind of break it down and kind of trace the logic and not just saying, hey, I know this is true, but I know why this is true. All right, and so that's something that's important. Right, and so understanding, but then he also talks about wisdom. He talks about being a wise man. Well, wisdom has to do with utilizing knowledge, and it has to do with utilizing understanding when it comes to application. And so knowledge leads to understanding, and understanding leads to wisdom. Right? We could call it insight and common sense put into practice. Right, and keep in mind, and we said this before, the Jewish folks love wisdom. Right, the Jewish folks love wisdom, and they had a whole section of the Ketuvim that was devoted to wisdom, and so they recognized the importance of having wisdom, even in the midst of suffering, but especially in the case of spiritual leadership. Right, and so I think I gave us an example when we were looking at wisdom before. And this is maybe a dumb example, but you know when we talk about knowledge that leads to understanding that leads to wisdom, we could say knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, right? And understanding is knowing why a tomato is a fruit. But wisdom is knowing that you don't put a tomato in a fruit salad, right? You know, when you're having your ice cream, right, you can put raspberries and blueberries on my ice cream, but don't put tomatoes on my ice cream, right? You can put raspberry sauce on my ice cream, but don't you dare put ketchup on my ice cream, all right? I won't eat it, right? And so knowledge is knowing, hey, a tomato's a fruit. Understanding is knowing why a tomato's a fruit. But wisdom, that's where knowledge and understanding actually come out in the choices that I make. And so the conclusion then, this first condition is for those among us who consider ourselves to be wise and to be understanding. And the imperative for us is to show it in a certain way. All right, he says, let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. And so the core phrase there is, let him show his works. Right? And so that first imperative is actually a repeat of what he's already said in chapter 2, right? That faith and works are inseparable, right? He says, show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You say you believe in God, show me. You say that you possess wisdom and understanding, show me. All right, and so this is a repeat of the idea from chapter 2 that faith and works are inseparable, that wisdom and works go together. And so this shouldn't be a new concept to the Jewish audience, and this shouldn't be a new concept to us. Right? Your actions will show what's in your heart, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. And so the core of this imperative is to show our works, right? To show our wisdom by our works. But James actually gives a few modifying phrases to help us understand how to do it. Because don't forget, we self-profess the ability for wisdom and understanding, right? We self-profess the ability to say, hey, I can take a truth and I can put it to work in my life. Okay, great. Here's the truth, and here's how to put it to work in your life. And so he says, show it out of a good conversation or good behavior. I think I said behavior earlier. That idea of conversation is lifestyle, right? You know, it's not just the way you talk, although that's an application, especially looking at where we were here in the beginning. But that word conversation, it has to do with your lifestyle, your choices, right? Where you go, who you talk to, what you say, what you listen to, what you watch, right? Who your friends are, all of that has to do with your conversation. And he says, show it out of a good conversation. Show it out of good behavior. But he also says with meekness of wisdom. And that idea of meekness is the idea of humility. So we could say, if you believe yourself to be wise and understanding, you demonstrate it with good behavior and humble wisdom, or humbleness of wisdom. All right, and so James is going to get a lot more specific, and he's actually going to give some examples of what this would look like, and what we're going to get there eventually when we get to subpoint A, which is actually all the way at the bottom. And so James is going to get there, but before he does that, he gets to the next part of his outline, which is the opposite side of the coin, and he introduces it with a second conditional. All right, and so we're eventually going to make the application of what good behavior and what humbleness of wisdom looks like. But before we continue on, I want us to ask ourselves, is this me? Am I someone who would profess to be wise and understanding? And am I someone who desires to commit myself to good behavior and humbleness of wisdom? Because the reality is, you're one or the other. You're either this guy or you're the next guy. And there's no in between. And as a body of believers, I would hope that we would be ones who would desire to commit ourselves to good conversation, right? To good behavior, to be humble in our wisdom. I would hope that that's something that we would desire to commit ourselves to. But we need to ask ourselves, is this me? And we need to pray and say, Lord, if this is me, then I pray that you would help me to desire to put on the things that are to come, the ways that I can show out of a good behavior the humbleness, or my works and my humbleness of wisdom. And so that's one application right off the bat before we actually get there. But James then gets to the next part of his outline, which is the opposite side of the coin, and he gives a second imperative based on a second conditional statement. And so he introduces it with this phrase, but if, right? And so he introduces the second conditional with this phrase, but if, to show that this is the other side of the coin. He says, but if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, right? And so yet again, let's participate in this exercise, right? When he asks who is wise and understanding among you, we participate in that exercise and we ask ourselves, is this me? And so yet again, by way of application, let's participate in this exercise and let's see the conditional and let's see if it applies to us. He says, if ye have bitter envying and strife in your heart. All right, and so let's define those terms as well. Envy is the idea of jealousy. It's a sinful desire that leads to discontentment and then ultimately leads to contempt. And so envy starts with, hey, that looks good. I'd like to have that someday, right? And here's the question. Is that wrong? Is it wrong for me as a believer to say, hey, you know, your house or your truck or your motorcycle or your boat or your TV or your whatever it is, hey, that looks good. I like that. You know, someday I'd like to have something like that. Is that wrong? No. And so desire is not wrong. So we need to ask ourselves, at what point does it become wrong? And so it starts with, hey, that looks good. I'd like to have that someday. And then it turns into, actually, I need to have that to be happy. What I have is not good enough. I need that to be happy. And so now my desire takes root in me and produces discontentment. And here's the question, is that wrong? Yes, it is. And we'll talk about why that's wrong in a minute. But envy actually goes one step further than that. It goes from, that looks good, I'd like to have that, to, I need that to be happy, what I have is not good enough, and then ultimately it becomes, if I can't have that, then you shouldn't have it either. And that's envy, right? The almighty internet actually had a pretty good observation about envy. And it said that envy is a social emotion stemming from comparison, right? And so I envy when I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at what you have, and I'm looking at what I have, and I'm saying, hey, what you have is better. I need to have that to be happy. And if I can't have that to be happy, then you shouldn't have it either, because you shouldn't be allowed to be happy without me. We should both be suffering together. That's envy. And so it's a social emotion of comparison. I thought that was a really good description there. But as if these definitions were not strong enough, James actually adds a modifier, and he talks about bitterness. He says, if you have bitter envying. So let's talk about bitterness. Bitterness is perhaps the number one thing that people in the world struggle with. If you do a survey, bitterness is way up there. It is something that so many people struggle with. I mean, people here, we struggle with this. People in this room are struggling with bitterness. And what is bitterness? Bitterness is a sharp feeling of resentment, anger, and hostility that often stems from unresolved hurts, injustices, and perceived betrayals. Now, let me ask you something. Does that sound familiar? You know, this is something that James's audience was familiar with, right? They're suffering in the diaspora, right? They've been scattered abroad. They're being persecuted. They're being treated unfairly. There's no doubt some betrayal that has taken place. And so they're dealing with some unresolved hurts. They're dealing with some injustices, and they're dealing with some perceived betrayals. Does that sound like something we deal with? Do we ever suffer injustices? Do we ever suffer perceived betrayals? Do we ever feel like we've been hurt and it's not resolved? Right? And so bitterness is something that's a problem for all of us. And what does bitterness do? Bitterness poisons our relationships. It harms our relationships, but it also harms our hearts. I don't know if he came up with this phrase, but I heard it from him. Sammy Fry said, bitterness is like drinking poison and expecting the other guy to die. You know, I get so angry, I get so hurt, I get so resentful, and I allow this poison, because that's what it is. I allow this poison to well up in my heart, and it poisons my heart, it poisons my relationships, and I want you to die, but I'm letting the poison stay in my heart. And unfortunately, sometimes the poison does come out, and James talked about that just a few verses earlier when he said, out of the same mouth proceeded blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. But bitterness, a poison of the heart. I'm so angry, I'm so resentful, I'm so hurt by the perceived betrayal and injustices that I don't have what I think I need to be happy. And so I'm going to be bitter, I'm going to be angry, I'm going to be resentful, I'm going to curse, I'm going to manipulate, I'm going to steamroll, I'm going to do whatever it takes for me to get my way, because I'm consumed with bitter envy. And you know, we don't often preach to ourselves in those strong of terms. I don't think any of us get up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, oh, Ben, you're just such a bitter, envious person. You need to get over yourself. We don't often preach to ourselves in those strong of terms, but we need to realize it's a huge problem. It's something that we all deal with, where we see what others have, and we kind of hang happiness on the hook of whatever that material thing, or it doesn't even have to be a material thing. We hang our satisfaction on the hook of whatever that thing is. And we allow it to make us bitter. So he says, if you have bitter envying, but he also mentions strife. And another definition for strife is selfish ambition. Right? Selfish ambition. This is a strong drive for personal success that often comes at the cost of moral and relational sacrifices. It can look like the desire to be in charge, the desire to be right, the desire to be comfortable, the desire to be liked, the desire to be wealthy, the desire to be the best at something, and really any host of other things. And selfish ambition, this is what's important, selfish ambition, if it is left unchecked, will always lead to bitter envy. All right? If I'm focused on what I want, every single time, that's going to lead me to bitter envy. And so these two things are not mutually exclusive. And James finishes with this phrase, in your hearts. And so he makes mention of the heart as the locale of bitter envy and selfish ambition. And we need to understand that he's not literally talking about a blood-pumping organ. He's using a metaphor, and he's referring to the core of a person's being. Right? It's important that we guard ourselves from sin. Right? Matthew 6:21, this is the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Hey, whatever it is that you're valuing, that's what you're all about. That's where your heart is. Right? Luke 6:45, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure of his heart, bringeth forth that which is evil. He says, for of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaketh. And so let's take inventory of our relationships. Are our relationships characterized by arguing and fighting and manipulating and trying to control and trying to get our way? Or are our relationships, are our conversations characterized by encouragement, building up, edifying. That's literally what edifying means. It means to build up. You know, when we're behind closed doors and nobody else can hear us, what do we say about people? That's what James is getting at here. He says in Proverbs 4:23, he says, "Keep your heart," or guard your heart, "with all diligence. Make it a priority, for out of it are the issues of life." That word issues, it means to go out, right? Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the going outs of life, right? If something issues forth, it goes out, right? And so whatever is in our heart is going to come out in our choices. And that's what James is talking about here. And so this conditional is if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart. And so by way of participating in the exercise, here's the question. All right, we asked ourselves if we consider ourselves to be wise and understanding. Now we need to ask ourselves, are there any areas of our lives where we are exhibiting either bitter envy or selfish ambition? And obviously, I can't answer that question for you. Obviously, I can't pinpoint for you where those are. Now, obviously, if you wanted to come to my office and sit down for, you know, a conversation about that, you know, I'd be happy to help you pinpoint that. That's something that I have some training in, and Pastor Jim as well. And so I would certainly be glad to do that. But I can't answer that question for you, but I can ask the question. Are there areas of our lives where we are exhibiting either bitter envy or selfish ambition? Right? We need to ask ourselves, or we need to ask the Lord, Lord, are there areas of my life where my eyes are on myself? Are there areas of my life where my eyes are on money? And I'm not talking about cost of living, right? Like, you have to earn a living wage, you have to pay the power bill, you have to eat. Like, you have to take care of your family. Like, that's like bottom shelf stuff. Like, you got to do that. And so I'm not talking about cost of living stuff. I'm talking about being consumed with finances. And by the way, that's something that I'm guilty of too, and my wife will tell you. You know, sometimes she'll come to me and she'll say, "Hey, I have this idea," and I'll go, "Well, how much is that going to cost?" Am I the only one that does that? Yeah, I better see some hands here, right? You know, hey, I've got this idea for something for, you know, a birthday party. How much is that going to cost? Hey, I thought maybe this year, you know, we could go on vacation together, and instead of doing, you know, the cheap cabin, maybe we can get something a little nicer. Ugh, that's like an extra $200. You know, hey, I have an idea for, you know, for this ministry thing. Well, how much is it going to cost? Hey, I have an idea for this thing, or hey, what do you want for Christmas? For Christmas, I want you to not spend the money that I worked hard to make. Am I the only one that's ever thought that? Yeah, I'm like, we're a single income household. Like, the best thing you could do for my birthday is not spend the money I worked so hard to make. Right? And sometimes, and we laugh, it is funny. But it's true. Lord, are my eyes on myself? Are my eyes on money? Am I consumed with finances? You know, it's interesting. There's this book that I've been reading, and I'm not all the way through it, but the guy that wrote it, he's talking about churches that have closed their doors, and I thought it was really interesting because we're in a very good place financially, and you're going to see that reflected on the budgets that are in your box. We'll talk about that more during the announcement time. And you're going to see that. And I'm so thankful to the Lord for that. But I thought it was interesting in the context of where we are right now. He was talking about churches that have shut down. And he said, when it comes to ascertaining why a church has shut down, he says, just follow the money. He goes, just follow the money and you'll figure it out every time. So I thought that was interesting. But anyways, you know, Lord, are there areas of my life where my eyes are on myself? Are there areas of my life where my eyes are on money? Are there areas of my life where my eyes are on what someone else has? Are there areas of my life where my eyes are on what I wish I could be? Am I competing to be the best? Am I competing to have the best? Am I competing to be on top? Do I manipulate others to get my way? Do I steamroll when I don't get my way? Do I place a higher value on my time, convenience, and prosperity than I do on my relationships with those around me? And here's what we need to understand about bitter envy and selfish ambition. In all of those things that I just said, Who was the subject? Me. What we need to understand about bitter envy and selfish ambition is that it is idolatry. It shifts my eyes away from God, and it is completely opposite from the good behavior and humble wisdom that ought to be characteristic of believers. And that's why James contrasts them. If we have wisdom and understanding, then we ought to show it by good behavior and humility of wisdom. But if we're struggling with bitter envy and selfish ambition, then we are not wise in understanding. And there is a different imperative that needs to be applied for us. And we see that in verse 14, in the second half of verse 14. He says, glory not and lie not against the truth. And by way of illustration, how many of you guys know who Bob Newhart is? Okay. I cannot do justice to Bob Newhart's physical comedy and comedic timing. And so I apologize in advance that this is not going to be good. But there's a sketch that he does. And he's like a psychiatrist, psychologist, something like that. Have you guys seen the one? Okay, don't spoil it for the rest of us, right? And this lady comes in and she's got this problem, right? And her particular problem is that she's terrified of being buried alive in a box. But maybe for us, it's a different problem. And so she comes to him and she's talking about just this problem that she's having and she needs help. And he goes, okay. He goes, all right. He goes, I'm going to say two words to you. And take these words, these two words, and take them home and put them into practice in your life, and you'll be fine. She's like, okay, should I write them down? And he goes, well, I mean, it's only two words. You know, most people feel like they can remember them, but, you know, if you want to write it down, that's fine. He goes, okay, are you ready? Here's the two words. Stop it! Just stop it. She's like, well, I can't. I'm just terrified of being buried alive. Stop it! Well, I'm just struggling with this. Stop it! Well, I'm just struggling with that. Stop it. All right. And you got to go look it up. Bob Newhart, stop it. It'll come up. It's hilarious. All right. James is far more compassionate than that. But you know what James is saying? Stop it. Hey, you claim to be wise and understanding, yet you're struggling with bitter envy and selfish ambition. Stop it. Stop it. Stop committing the sin of idolatry by putting your prosperity, your convenience, your ambition above others and above God. Stop it. He says, glory not and lie not against the truth. And so the way that this is phrased in the Greek, there's only one not. And so there's a couple different ways that this statement could be interpreted. It could be that he is giving a dual imperative. Do not glory and do not lie against the truth. It could be that he's giving a singular imperative that is manifested in two different ways. Do not violate the truth by glorying against it and by lying against it. Or it could be that he's giving a singular imperative and telling us what the result of that is. Do not boast and in so doing lie against the truth. And I tend to favor option three. And the King James rendering is not incompatible with that. And so I think that's what's going on here. But he starts by saying, glory not. Literally, do not boast of oneself. It's a middle passive, right? Do not boast of oneself. Don't be arrogant. Don't be full of yourself. This is the idea of a me first, my way. My way is better. Your way is stupid. So we're going to do things my way. All right? And probably, hopefully none of us have ever said, my way is better and your way is stupid, so let's do things my way. Hopefully nobody's ever said those words. But how many of us act that way? How many of us act like, my way is better and your way is stupid, so you'd just be better off to do things my way? Like, go have your fun, go try it your way, but when you fail, come on back, I'll tell you I told you so, and then I'll tell you how to do it the right way. Right? And sometimes we do use those words. I'll tell you how to do it the right way. Right? But that's what James is getting at here when he says, do not boast of yourself. Right? We've already ascertained why, and he's going to take that up more in the verses to follow. But the short answer here is that that James is saying is that boasting is actually injurious to the truth. Right? When I'm living this bitter envy and selfish ambition lifestyle where everything's about me and my desires and my convenience and me first, my way, I'm right, you're wrong, your way stupid, so you know, just listen to me, trust me, I'm right, you're wrong, life will be easier when you do everything my way, I'll steamroll you to get it, right? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? He says when we do that, we actually harm the truth. He says, lie not against the truth. This is the idea of knowing truth, but not putting it into practice. And this is what wisdom is all about, isn't it? Wisdom is about taking truth and putting it into practice in our lives, right? And we'll get to our phrase in just a minute. You know it's coming. Taking truth and putting it into practice, this is what wisdom is all about. And James is going to make the claim in a few verses at the end of chapter 4, but I'm going to put it here as well. This is what James says. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, finish it. To him it is sin. And so if I say, yes, I am a wise and understanding person, I am qualified to be in this spiritual role that I attain to or that I desire to have, yes, this is who I am. But then I turn around and I have bitter envy and I have selfish ambition and I'm a backbiter and I'm a steamroller and I'm a manipulator. What I'm doing is I'm saying, yes, this is what I know to be true, but I'm not going to live it out because my way is better. All right? And so the dichotomy of what James is saying should resonate with us. As believers, we would all claim, at least hopefully claim, to be wise and understanding, yet so often we fail to put it into practice, and when we do, we lie about the truth. We pretend like we don't believe what we profess to believe. You know, maybe by way of illustration, you know, maybe you've never actually had this conversation with God in these terms, But at least spiritually, all of us have had this conversation with God. Lord, I know that your word says X, but for the next 5-10 minutes, I'm going to pretend like none of that is true, and I'm going to participate in Y. You know, I know that your word says not to tear people down and to be encouraging, but for the next couple minutes, I'm just going to pretend like I don't know that, and I'm going to say all kinds of angry, bitter, nasty things. Lord, I know your word says, you know, that whoso looketh on a woman to have lust for her in his heart has committed adultery with her already in his heart. I know your word says that, but for the next 5-10 minutes, I'm just going to ignore that, and I'm going to look at garbage on the internet. Lord, I know that your word says X, but for the next few minutes, I'm just going to ignore that, and I'm going to participate in Y. And what we're doing is we're saying, I know better than God. I'm qualified to be God of my heart. And what we're doing is we're boasting, we're glorying, and we are lying about what we profess to be true. And that's a big problem. Titus expresses that same sentiment this way. In Titus 1:16, he says, they profess that they know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable and disobedient, and unto every good work reprobate. And so James is going to add to his argument for wisdom in action by explaining how what we believe affects our actions. But unfortunately, it is 12:03. That's really all the time we have. And so we're going to kind of break off here. I'm going to kind of leave you on a cliffhanger. James is saying, show your wisdom by good behavior. Don't be a jerk. And then when you come back next week, he'll tell us why. Okay? And so I'm kind of leaving you on a cliffhanger here. But the conclusion of what James is saying, and we'll look at this conclusion next week as well, the conclusion of what James is saying is that your belief should influence your behavior. Do you know what another way of saying that is? What you know to be true will determine what you do. And so as believers, if we profess to be wise and understanding, if we profess to know the truth, then we need to live it out. Because if we don't live it out, we are actually doing damage to the Word of God and the testimony of His saints.